Hello, guys. Hello. I'm so excited to be back for our first healing series call for this new year. It's really exciting. I took a little time off since the last pod call with Brother Thomas. And, you know, I've been looking forward to this for the last few weeks because I know that it really helps a lot of people who are a little hesitant to reach out and get some help in their healing stages. So whenever these calls come about, I get really, really, really excited to help out the community wherever I can. But anyway, welcome back to all of you Cherished supporters. Thank you for tuning in to support Can We Talk with Jewel podcast, proudly sponsored by FundraisingCup.org Ministries. I hope you guys are ready to delve into more topics this year that will uplift our communities and nurture our healing and spiritual growth. All right, so please remember your ongoing support and donations are invaluable, and I encourage each and every one of you to continue contributing to this mission of healing, love, and light. Okay, so without further ado, welcome back to our healing series with none other than the esteemed Stephanie E. Scoopin, who helps people feel good enough in their lives through the work of Byron Katie. Welcome back, Stephanie.
Thank you, Jewel. It's a pleasure to be back. 2025, here we go. I'm very excited that we're continuing the series. And it's so lovely to, to keep hearing your dedication and your mission to support people out there. And I'm blessed to, to be part of that journey. Thank you.
Oh, it's our absolute pleasure to have you and an honor because you are so skilled in this field and the insight is invaluable that you offer to our community and those newcomers that I've seen kind of trickle in and find us to be a safe space. Welcome, welcome. Come on in. We're very happy to have Ms. Scoopin help out in the way she is. And I want to encourage all of you guys into the next phase of this healing series, which is actually reaching out to her personally. And I know that step is sometimes very challenging to kind of open up to someone that you may not feel you know personally yet. And that's why with this podcast, you get to know both her and myself. And we want you to feel more comfortable with this safe space. She's a phenomenal woman to work with, and I can assure you I feel safe with her. And I share a lot of my personal healing journeys with you all online and with her. So I hope you guys feel comfortable to do the same with her privately. So I want to encourage that. Okay, so today's topic is standing up for yourself, which I know many people struggle with. I can tell you I struggled with it for maybe the first 20 years of my adulthood. Ironically, I know some people are like, well, you seem really outspoken on this podcast. Yeah, well, once I kind of gotten into corporate America and gotten into marriage and various contracts, it was challenging finding my voice again and really standing up for myself in full transparency and claiming my authority of what I will and will not agree to and tolerate. And so if those of you who've been challenged with that, I think today's podcast will be very insightful and helpful to each and every one of you. What do you think, Steph?
Yeah, I think it's a great topic, and it's also a very complex topic to me.
Yes.
Because for me, what comes up, as you were suggesting the topic a couple of days ago, and then I've been thinking about it since, and thinking about, how that is playing out in my own life and what I see with the people that I work with. And I think the main thing that keeps coming up for me is that is the question, you know, why is it that we struggle and to stand up for ourselves, and you know, and then also which parts of ourselves struggle. And I think that for me is been the biggest thing to see, is that, you know, we say I have to stand up for myself, and then for me the first and most important question is who are you in that moment? Who is it actually that needs to stand up and that wants to be more outspoken? Because what I really have found working with people is that we all carry more than one persona. We are made up of, like, you know, very different, like a lot of different pieces of our lives. Like, so, you know, as you said, Jewel, like if you're married, you're the wife. If you have children, you're the mother. Then you're also the corporate employee, or you might be a manager, or you might be a student, or, you know, so we have all these different personalities, and we always stay the children of our parents, for better or for worse. And so in each of those situations, the question is, like, which of these pieces, parts of me is able to stand up or not able to stand up? And for which of these parts is it even beneficial to stand up? Because a lot of the time, I think we end up, you know, afterwards we go back and go like, oh, I should have spoken up to myself. And then that gives rise to feelings of inadequacy. And, you know, like the internal monologue starts with, well, I never stand up for myself and I should know better and da, da, da. And if we start to actually look at those situations, then, you know, sometimes it was safer not to. And it was it was actually a good decision not to, because until such a time that we're clear what we need and that we don't put ourselves into the way of further trauma, further hurt, and, you know, emotional hurt in some way, sometimes it's better to not. So it's really such a complex topic, and I'd love to hear, Jewel, how you came, what was it that, like, in your life, where was it that you really found that that clarity, you know, like, okay, so this is where I am standing up for myself more than I used to?
Well, you know, it's funny that you mentioned, you asked two key questions, and I'm going to address that inquiry you just made as well, in what you just said, when did it happen, why you weren't standing up for yourself. And, you know, I reflected on that question as you posed it, and I thought, you know, I think it kind of stems back to, you know, the early stages of childhood and our experiences with our paternal figures, those in authority, and our childhood associates, and so forth, and those early connections, and how we've learned to deal with detachment, abandonment, all kinds of fears of what would happen if I told this person I don't like that. It doesn't make me feel comfortable. I don't think you're being fair to me. The anxiety that came with it, and how we've managed those feelings as young people just kind of evolved as we've grown older, and it hasn't been healed. It hasn't been addressed. And so I find that, at least for me, what I've observed within myself and others is that when these questions aren't addressed and we don't heal internally, our response can sometimes be toxic. It may not result in clear communication because we may want to dismiss the situation entirely. There's just a myriad of ways in dealing with these situations because they weren't healed at an early age, right?
Exactly. Right.
And as for your second question to me as to how did I come about
this I guess revolution as to I needed to stand up for myself.
Well,
as I went through my own marriage, and I went through, as you mentioned, we all wear different masks, right? When we have on a different mask when we're at work, a different mask at home, a different mask with our children, different mask with the various people we interact with, right? So there's so many dynamics to us, and those of us who have taken psychology can kind of relate to that. So I realized as I was wearing these different masks with these different groups of people I would engage in, I would deal with these uncomfortable situations where, I'll give you an example. I would be at work and I would be set up for failure. Someone would try to take credit for my work. Someone would, I felt at the time I may have been deemed as an easier target as a female or a woman of color that may not feel comfortable publicly addressing these areas and may clam up to feeling like I didn't have the support of my peers because I looked different. I was different.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know if these people would, in fact, do the right thing because of it. And I found very early in my career, I became a little timid and afraid to say, hey, you can't do that. That's wrong. And I'm offended. And that's my work. You know, these kind of, and I don't want to say aggressive, because when we associate the term aggressive a lot of times with women, it has a negative connotation. So I'll say assertive. I didn't take the assertive role in addressing mistreatment, targeting, and being taken advantage of at work. And I spent a few years kind of wrestling with, why is this so hard for me, right? Because I felt isolated. I felt like, well, you know, if I'm going to represent all women of color in this room, I don't want the memory in these people's minds to be of the connotation of an angry black woman. So how can I address these misdealings, these mishandlings in a way that I don't come across that way? And then one day it just dawned on me. And I realized that I was not in control of how these individuals would perceive me. I cannot stop them from even continuing that connotation of an angry black woman, even if that's not what I am doing. I am not in control of their response, of their feelings, but I am in control of my space and myself and my boundaries. And once I took ownership of that, I felt a lot more comfortable standing up for myself without carrying that added weighted pressure of worrying about how they would perceive it, if that makes sense.
That is absolutely beautiful. That's just, and I think that is the one way of actually going forward. You know, I mean, life is never safe, but I think that is the safest way of doing it, because it means you're taking responsibility for yourself. So, again, that it takes me back to the way the work of Byron Katie helps with doing that, with taking that responsibility, with, you know, stepping into how can I behave to be that role model and to be clear on my boundaries, on what's right and wrong for me. And it starts with, like, looking at ourselves, because we're conditioned to look outward first. We go, like, you know, if we, as kids, like, if we do this and this, then our parents are going to love us, right? If we do this and this, then we're going to be safe. If we do this and this, then that's, so we look outwards for that safety and that recognition, you know, that we want, like the love that we want. And, mm-hmm. and, looking then at ourselves first is in the beginning really counterintuitive. And we easily fall into this, well, but I, you know, it's not my fault. There's nothing I could do. And, you know, and, it's like, I just did my best. So there is a part of us that gets defensive very quickly.
Yes.
And then we don't respond. We react. And it's out of those childhood situations that you've been describing, you know, we fall into the patterns that we found that worked for us on some ways, which is, can be, you know, generally they're like part of the three survival patterns. Either we freeze or we run away or we attack. And,
yes.
And so standing up can often be confused with attacking. And it's not that mm-hmm. at all, because you really, when you're attacking, you're reacting out of an old hurt.
Yes.
Whereas when you're responding to something, it comes from a knowledge of who am I in this situation? What is it that triggers me here? And how can I make sure I am in line with my values? First of all, and exactly what you're saying, I cannot influence what others are doing, thinking and believing. It's not in my control ever. And I can just drop that. I can drop that entirely. That's not my sphere of influence. That's not my business. The only thing that's my business is how do I show up? And
yeah,
doing the work of Byron Katie is such a powerful tool to find that way, because the question is, what do you think of them? So they don't respect me. They don't listen to me. They don't care about me. They're sabotaging me. And,
mm-hmm.
and then the question goes into, so when I'm thinking this about them, how do I react?
Please,
and then by contemplating that question, just for ourselves, you know, you don't have to share it, because sometimes in the beginning it can be a little shocking what we're actually doing and how we're coming across. You know, you start to see like, okay, well, I give them the look. You know, my voice out of a sudden gets really nasty. Even though I say the right thing, my tone might not actually be respectful. The way my body moves, the way I, you know, the way I give
body language.
I might, exactly. I might say something polite while already walking away, you know, effectively dismissing them. And so you get to know you in that situation. And then the next piece of it is really to see, if I didn't carry that judgment on that person, who would I be? What's the freedom of for me to respond differently in that situation? And that's immense, because a lot of the time we also interpret situations out of our childhood trauma.
Yeah.
And once we step away from that fear or anger or, you know, hurt that we used to feel, then out of a sudden we see situations differently. So, and I'm just, you know, one of the stories, I've just listened to one of Byron Katie's podcasts, and she's doing the work with a lady who, you know, she's now in her, whatever, 50s or so, her mother is dying, and she's doing the work on the time when she was 6 years old and her mother took her away from her father, the father that she loved dearly, dearly. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she's in this hotel room at night, and she says, "Mommy, when are we going home?" And her mother says, "We're not going home." And so the six-year-old girl thinks in that moment, "I will never see my father again."
Mm-hmm.
And that's how she continued to then live her life, with that disappointment and the fear and the anger towards her mother. And as she's going back in the inquiry in meditation, into that memory, the next thing that she says is, when will I see Puffy? And her mother says, well, maybe on the weekend. So very different from never.
Yeah.
But we forget. We don't see those because they don't support our hurt. And we're too scared to not believe the hurt. We think that, okay, we better be careful. We better be on high alert all the time.
Yeah.
And so that to me is the big difference, you know, that it's like when we stand up for ourselves out of this trauma, you know, out of this old pain, then that's a detrimental action because it almost always leads to fighting. And we don't represent ourselves well.
You're spot on. You're absolutely correct. And I realized that as well. I think when you mentioned even earlier this, the idea of even role playing after an incident had occurred. I remember even my teenage years, which are very formative for a lot of people, especially for young women, because at that time, you may deal with a lot of gossiping and rumors and
oh my goodness, no kidding.
Yeah, just situations that just, you know, are surreal. You know, people setting each other up for fun and games and thinking it's, you know, just funny to torment and harass people. And sadly enough, some people mentally haven't grown out of that teenage mentality of behaving in that way. And I think it may trigger a lot of us who've had bad experiences when we come across someone who hasn't mentally advanced and continue to carry themselves in that youthful manner, and before we could even catch ourselves and respond in a way that represents ourselves well or how we perceive as well, we're triggered into a response that that delves with that hurt from the childhood or the teenage years, if that makes any sense. And
it makes total sense. And Jewel, You go.
Just one last statement I was going to say, and I say this to say, when that did happen to me as a young teenager, I recalled, and I don't know if any of the followers did this, but I recall the day after I would have a situation with another teenager, and I knew that they were trying to set me up into some type of gossiping nonsense, and I knew it wasn't true, and I've always been an advocate for truth and justice for as long as I could remember. I remember going, when I would take a shower, I would role play as to how I would or should have handled it and how I will handle it going forward. I don't know how many people have done that, but I recall doing that, and sometimes I still do it if I feel like, oh man, I think I could have handle that better. Well, if I come across this person again, I'm going to be forthright and not emotionally react, but kind of hold my footing in what the truth is. And so I wanted to get your opinion on what do you think about that?
I think that's very, very powerful. What I find is I use the work of Byron Katie, and it is it gives you the opportunity to role play. It also gives you the opportunity to really step out of your story of being hurt. Like, for example, this is a situation that I've come across recently, like just for myself, you know, working in a corporate environment and then, talking with somebody about how other people are gossiping. And as I'm talking, I'm just noticing that as I'm complaining about it, I do exactly the same.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so what I do then is, when I notice it, what I do then is I stop and I say, oh, and look at me doing exactly that.
The same thing, yes.
And so, like, I create a witness for myself. I say, you know, yeah. Oh, look at that. And then for one thing, it really absolves the, in my own mind, it absolves the other people that are gossiping of any misdeeds. Because, hey, look how easy you fall into it. I do it too.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Right? Because this is you know, coming back to Christianity, this is Jesus saying, you know, you don't see the piece of wood in your own eyes, and you see the splinter in the, and really that's what the work helps me do, is that I see where I carry all of those things, where I do all of those things myself, and then what I do, this in the work, it is called a living turnaround. It's to go back to the person, when you found how you can take responsibility, you go back and say, hey, about that conversation we had the other day, I just wanted to say I wasn't happy with my conduct in these ways, and I'm going to do better. And that really is a powerful thing to do. And if you find that you've been if I find I've been not nice to somebody, I can add the question, I want to apologize, and how can I make this right? And really, 90% of the time, people don't even know what I'm talking about, because they go like, oh, no, don't worry about it. But every now and then, somebody will say, oh, wow, that's amazing, and I would love you to do this.
Yes,
I think I really love that, because
right, it is very powerful.
I haven't done that, but I think that if I were in a room with someone who took ownership that they were pulled into gossiping as well, then it wouldn't feel as if they're just pointing fingers. They're actually owning the fact that it could happen to anyone, which shows
exactly.
me the level of maturity that they have, and they're not isolating just the individual who was gossiping. So I think that's been a really good approach. I like that. I like that a lot.
Yeah. It is very powerful. And then, Jewel, I just wanted to say one thing, because you said, you know, there are, and I think it fits into this piece as well. You said there are, you know, a lot of people out there that don't seem to have progressed from a teenager level of maturity. And I want to come back to this, you know, it's a term coined by a psychologist called Nadine Kreisinger. I don't want to pretend it's mine. And she calls it the round table of inner characters. And really, it is about the different personas that we carry. And we all carry a child, an inner child, a wounded child most often. And we all carry an inner teenager, you know, and so... Uh-huh. You know, to like define a person, to say like this person hasn't reached that level of maturity. Well, they might in that moment respond or act out as a teenager, but in other moments they might well be way more mature. And you know, it's easy to just fall into that judgment and go, oh yeah, look at that, I'm so much more mature. Right? Because that's like... So at the same time, you know, like we all at times respond out of the child. That's how it is. That's how we do things. So just to notice, we are fluid in that way. Most of us are, to a large extent.
Yes. But I think it's key to identify that this individual may have not grown past a certain hurt, and they may project, they may behave in a way that is just not mature, you know. And when I say that, I'm talking about if they're targeting someone, gossiping about someone, trying to set someone up. These are things that I think as we grow in our, not just faith, but just how we treat others, we should realize that's not acceptable. There's no need to ever have to step on anyone and invade their boundaries or abuse someone for you to rise. And when we can identify, okay, this is what this person is attempting to do here, right? We process it.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's our responsibility to control how we respond to it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the challenge comes in, because if you haven't matured individually and this behavior triggers you, even if you have identified it, but you are not in control of yourself, well, now we have two individuals that need healing instead of one.
Right. I do think most of the situations in life fall under that. I think there are a few people out there that might be mature enough to not get triggered anymore, but I think there's very few, Joel. I think,
I know.
We easily, right? And some,
yeah.
So that's the work we do. We continually work on our triggers and we find compassion for ourselves and so we are more open towards others and more able to come as we grow stronger, as our hearts are more healed, we're more able to be open to the broken hearts of others, you know? Really that's where, when people are stuck in a particular reactive pattern, it's because there is a brokenness of the heart, not because there is a viciousness. Even though it can look vicious, I'm not saying it never does.
I don't want to omit
that.
Because some people are
no,
vicious.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's a thing that I want to own as well. There are certain things, and I don't, at this moment in time, I have never been in a situation where I needed to act vicious. But that doesn't mean that I haven't imagine vicious acts, like especially as a mother of girls, I'm thinking like, oh my goodness, there is somebody's got to do something to them, and my imagination can get real vicious.
I'm not saying I don't carry that as well.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I can definitely relate as a mom, and I think that for a quick second, if I do feel that my children are in any kind of danger by another adult or even another child,
right?
You guys don't want to know the thoughts that go through my mind, but I have.
Right?
I can say that I've mastered the art of detachment, and I can pull myself or my child away from anyone that I feel would place them in danger without any remorse, which I think is probably the best way for me to handle it than to handle it with the first thoughts that go through my mind.
Absolutely. And at the same time, it can look vicious. Even that can look vicious to some people.
It can be perceived as vicious to the other party. Because they may not feel like they've gotten enough closure or, but I can only be in control of what I'm in control of. And I feel like if you have gone that far in terms of my boundaries, I'm not going to continue to engage with you that you have endangered my child.
Absolutely. And that is such an important part of standing up for yourself, isn't it? This is the truth that I'm feeling deeply right now. Like, until I've seen, any evidence to the contrary, I'm now making the judgment call that we are in danger and you are out of my life. And that's perfectly legitimate.
Yes, yes. And I think that's so key for people to understand, is that you don't need to get into this fiery, darting argument and bringing closure to the fact that you feel you're right beyond a reasonable doubt. You can detach. You are in control of yourself and detach. I think that's so powerful, because detachment is an answer. It may not be liked, but it is an answer. Yep. And I think that is just a powerful thing in standing up for yourself. I think that for me is like my final draw card is like, you know what? You've crossed my final boundary. I'm detaching. And, I just think that's so powerful that you brought that up. Absolutely.
Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to point out that worked for me, Steph, is practicing being an active listener. And,
oh, yeah.
And then controlling how I respond. Because I think in my youthful days, I would be so quick to respond. Sometimes I didn't even hear what the person was saying because I came in knowing that I was right. I really felt
right.
That there was nothing you could say that would counter the fact that I'm right. So really and truly, I don't even understand why this is a conversation. I came in with the attitude like it would be more of a lecture conversation.
Right.
And I had to kind of grow to realize, let this person speak. Listen to what they're saying. Listen to whether they're even processing what happened, where they may have been wrong. Let's see if they've even acknowledged or accepted that. And then you can share with them how you feel about it and the facts of the situation. So
if they want to hear it.
That's what helped me. If they want to hear it at that. But that's what kind of helped me get into that healing stage of being of standing up for myself, because a lot of times if they're not willing to listen, then it seems like a pointless endeavor to even further work yourself up into this pointless one-sided conversation, because no one's there's no takeaway from this. We're still
exactly.
going to be on opposite ends of the court with no remedy of any sort. So active listening definitely helped me in also choosing my battles. I think you mentioned that earlier, is that not every situation even deserves your confrontation, right?
Yeah.
I used to, like I said, in my youthful days, I felt that every situation needed to be handled. And if I didn't handle it, then that's when I would have the role play of how I was going to handle it when it occurred again. And as I matured and realized, you know what, maybe the fact that it wasn't handled was necessary for me to get to the next stage of detachment. Not everything deserves your energy of getting into that space of complete rage and anger. I think it's important to stand up for yourself and knowing what battles are even worth standing up for. But what do you think about that, Steph?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And I think the question is also, do you want it to be a battle or, you know, does it have
that
to be
too.
A battle?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you know, like,
even need to be a battle. Mm-hmm.
And it's part of the thing that you said with the active listening, right? So if someone is clearly not interested in what you have to say, then why spend time on it, right?
Yes.
Then
yes.
It is. And I think it still might be absolutely worth everybody's while to listen and to ask questions to make sure you fully understand. And, you know, and then ask, like, do you want to hear my part of it? And not most people will say, yes, of course. And then you will say one sentence and they will immediately interrupt. And then you know that they just say yes, but they didn't mean yes. And then you can drop
exactly.
it.
Exactly. Yes.
And,
yes. And I
and
have.
Some,
I'm sorry. Continue.
That's I think probably what you're going to say will fit in pretty nicely into the flow. So continue.
Yes, I was going to say I've had my fair share of gaslighters that, you know, would give me the impression that they were going to alter their behavior but had no plans at all to alter their behavior, and their actions begin to speak more loudly than their words. And so to continue to go in this roundabout circle with them and telling them, hey, this is where my boundary is, you continuously cross it, and them playing the game of, you know, I don't think I did that. I think you're not seeing the picture for what it is, and you spelling it out for them, giving examples, you know, and the situation reoccurs, and then it reoccurs again. Well, at some point, you have to decide, what are you going to do about the fact that this has now become a mouse and cat game? And they're clearly not listening to what you're saying, or feel that it matters to them enough to change their behavior. In those situations, you know, we talked about detachment. We talked about you being in control of your reaction to this to avoid that constant roundabout behavior and frustration of you dealing with it in your head. And I know I've dealt with this in childhood with a lot of authority figures. And, you know, their answer was, well, I hold this place of authority over your life, so you just have to deal with it. Right? And that trauma of experiencing that as a youth and then carrying it with you when you have a similar situation in adulthood, and now telling yourself, I don't have to deal with that. I'm an authority of myself. This is my boundary, and I'm not playing this game with you. You have now lost access.
Right.
What are your thoughts, Beth?
Right. I think that is absolutely legitimate. And what I have found is with the work is that everything I think about somebody else's is turning, can turn around, can be turned around in the words exactly, and help me to understand where I am part of perpetuating the situation. And especially,
yeah,
like they're not listening to me is such a powerful example of that. And it always turns around into, I'm not listening to them. So where is it that I'm not hearing what they're saying? And that is part of what you're saying. Could just be, I'm not hearing that they can't, what they're showing me, you know, that they can't hear me. They're not able to step out of their pattern. Maybe I'm not seeing that. That could be one. But it could also be that they're actually saying something really worthwhile that I just don't want to hear. And because I am also active, I keep not wanting to hear it. And so there's always both of those with the work. There is always the opportunity to look deeper. And that doesn't mean you have to ever see that person again, because that person's going to stay in your head forever.
Yes.
And keep telling you the same stuff again. You don't actually have to engage with them if you don't want to, if they've done something. But to go back and question my assumptions about what was going wrong, that's my healing.
Yes, yes, definitely. We don't want them to rent space in your head. I know that I've given people certain condos in mine for quite some years, and I've had to renovate and say no more. So I totally get it, and I think...
And they're
still
all in your head, and they're still coming around, and you think about them, and you mention them in the podcast. And so, you know, like that's the thing. We say like, okay, well, these people are out of my life, and I don't ever have to deal with them again. But the truth of it is they're still around in our head.
I know. You're absolutely right. That is the truth. And I think that, you know, for me, I had to love myself enough to choose, to actively choose myself. And
absolutely.
And that to me was revolutionary, because we hear about, you know, choosing yourself all the time, but to actively choose yourself in whatever situation you're in and saying, you know what, hey, this is not healthy for me. I can't be so consumed about how you perceived the situation or how, I just have to choose to love myself enough to know I need to heal in order to decide if I want to continue this relationship and work on it with you, or if I think it's best for me to leave it alone because I love myself.
Right.
And I know that.
And the deeper, the more you can use that enemy, that apparent other person to get to know yourself in deeper ways.
Yeah.
The more it will say about you if you can still love yourself. Like, for example, you know, just a small example, like the example of the gossip, right? So I'm finding out,
oh, yeah.
I know the work. I know how it turns around. I see myself gossiping. So I find out, oh, look, I'm a gossip too. Do I still love that? You know, like, I'm judging others for being vicious, so I'm turning it around. I'm vicious. Where am I vicious? I can see it. Can I still love that? So that's the courage of really looking at all, you know, of all facets of ourselves, not just the ones that are lovable in apostrophes, right? But the complete and total humanity that I embody, can I love all of that? And at that point, it also becomes just easy to say yes or no to situations. You don't even have to think about it. You don't have to defend it, to justify it. It's just going to be yes to this and no to that. And that's how it is. And I might change my mind
tomorrow. I think that's so key into even facing your own darkest just feelings and responses and triggers. It has to be done. It needs to be done. I know for me, one of the things that I realized pretty early is that I make excuses for people, and I would open the door too quickly instead of really actively listening and really embracing whether or not they were working on their own healing and how much, if they weren't working on it, how much damage it was doing to me. That was definitely a tough stage for me because, you know, I've never realized that I actively participated in my own hurt.
Right. Yes.
It
comes
like,
as a surprise
so
when you first
yes,
see
yeah.
it.
It was like shocking. Like, you know, it was so easy for me to point the finger at someone and be like, no, but you're hurting me repeatedly.
Uh-huh.
And you're not stopping. And then it was like, okay, but Jewel, you are, you're creating an environment where they're comfortable doing so.
Mm-hmm.
And taking that accountability was like, oh, I am. You know?
Uh-huh.
I had no clue.
Yes.
I had no clue. I was like, you know, you could only see yourself, of course, in the best light. And you don't realize that there's parts of you as well that need
absolutely
work in healing. And that's one of the reasons why I'm so fond of working with Stephanie, because she helps you get to that part of yourself that you wouldn't otherwise even see or recognize that needs work. That I really need to work on that. I really need to say, Jewel, you know, in my role playing, Jewel, if you continue to allow this person to hurt you after you told them numerous times they're hurting you and they're getting persistently more aggressive in hurting you, then your actions are telling them it's okay.
Absolutely.
So those of you who've experienced that, I think that's something for you to reflect on as well. What are your actions telling the other person, right, if you are allowing it to happen repeatedly and you are not doing anything about it and it's getting worse? That is on you to think about. That's your homework, to think about and reflect on your own active participation in your own hurt and encouraging others to cross your boundaries when you don't stand up for yourself.
And in the interest of self-compassion, that like often we do it, we allow it to stay safe, which is sounds paradoxical, but a lot of the time that is the motivation, is because either we fear something worse is going to happen if we stand up, and to be honest, especially if you're in an abusing relationship, it might. So this is a serious consideration. So, and so it's not, again, like, yes, absolutely stand up for yourself, but also be, do it with clarity, like within your own safety, like especially, you might even just be at work in a little bit of a toxic environment. Like you stand up for yourself and well, now you're out of work. Is that preferable?
Yes. And, these are all the things that come with standing up for yourself is, this world that we live in, it's not black and white, right? And we do need resources to survive. So it's challenging skating that fine line of, how far am I going to let this individual go with my boundaries that won't impact the food that my children need to survive.
Exactly. And if you just look at it, then you can go like, okay, well, so yes, this might happen. So then what are my options? Like, and then instead of exploding and being out of a job, you start looking for another job before you explode.
Yes. Start working on that resume, start looking for another job, actively knowing or planning that I know that I'm going to have to stand up for myself because I choose myself and I love myself and I can't allow anyone to repeatedly degrade me, cross my boundaries and steal from me or take advantage of me. So I need to plan ahead. And as I see that this is approaching, what can I do to protect myself? And that would probably mean, like you said, start looking elsewhere, preparing that resume, taking those early steps to try to protect yourself the best you can, because that's all we can do.
Exactly. And in the meantime, practice the role play under the shower as to how to approach the toxic situation in the most mature and satisfying way, because, mature is always more satisfying than looking back and going like, oh, my goodness, what did I do there? That could have been better.
Because
in the moment, anger seems so satisfying. And like, it feels so satisfying to really let rip at somebody. But it's not the wisest course of action most of the time. And that doesn't mean anger is bad in itself. It's not.
No.
It's an emotion.
It is.
And it gives us a lot of energy. But... yeah,
I must say, Steph, it feels very therapeutic as that water's hitting you and you're saying, if you do this to me again, I will not tolerate that kind of conduct. It does feel therapeutic at the time, I must say.
That's what I was saying. At the same time, when we are at the receiving end of that therapy, it is very helpful.
Yes.
And scary.
Yeah.
So,
just
the thing to consider.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's true. What she's saying is absolutely true. You don't want anyone coming at you with that kind of aggression before you
with
can
that kind of therapy, right?
Yes. Whether merited or not, we want to be mature about our interactions with others and handle it as gracefully as we can. So I agree.
Yeah.
But if you do need that little bit of therapy in the shower, I would recommend getting it all out and going for it.
Yeah.
And releasing that anger, before you meet up with that individual. But with that said, I noticed we're going a little bit, over time, and I want to honor Ms. Lupin's time because she's just a valuable guest to our show, and I appreciate having her so much. And I just wanted to kind of close out with a very brief scripture that I think can help all of you guys in reflecting on standing up for yourself, which is Ephesians 6:10, which tells us to put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the schemes of the devil. And so may that give you the encouragement to know that it's okay to stand up for yourself, especially if you're dealing with any kind of schemes, manipulation, or untruths. It's definitely something we all may come across and have to deal with at some point in our journey. So I leave you guys with that word and hope that it inspires healing. Is there any closing comments you have, Ms. Lupin, that you want to share with our guests?
No, I think that was a lovely piece of scripture in closing.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm so glad that you agree. I want to thank all of you guys for your ongoing support, listening, commentary that you put on online with these healing series. I know I've seen a few where people asked if we could continue doing it and how they look forward to it. So I am trying my best to be steadfast, and hopefully Ms. Lupin will continue to have time in her very busy schedule to help all of you in your healing journey. And I encourage you guys to reach out to her as well individually, because she's just an amazing woman, mom, that I have worked with and learned so much from. So I hope you guys have taken some of the gems we've left with you regarding standing up for yourself, and we look forward to hearing how it has worked in your life. So thank you so much for joining us in today's healing series in Can We Talk with Jewel, and we look forward to speaking again during our healing series next month. We wish you well. Thank you.